depending on the day of the week and the traffic or lack of something going on. But obviously before that, we're going to do a quick commercial break, and then we will get into it. So stay tuned.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Okay, we are back, and happy Monday morning. Hopefully everyone's getting to the places they need to be with minimal traffic or issues. And if you're working from home, you are lucky. No, I'm sorry, and I have no voice. I seem to be losing it. So, you know, talking a little bit about infrastructure, and I guess maybe let's start with a lot of our residents commute outside the county to other parts of the state, mostly the New York area, so Jersey City, Newark, New York. And I don't know, your husband commutes into the city, my husband commutes into the city.
That's right.
And it's not an easy trip in any way, shape, or form. You know, it's a struggle that we have for all of our residents that are trying to get someplace. So if you're driving, you never know what's going to happen on 78. If you're taking the train, it is going to take you 3 hours, give or take, to get door-to-door from High Bridge to New York City. And then the bus, again, just like the car, is a let's wait and see what's going to happen. And, you know, we hear a lot about the Gateway Tunnel and the fact that the infrastructure is not there to support the volume of traffic that needs to come. So, you know, one of the things that I always harp on with anyone I'm talking to, and happened to run into a New Jersey Transit person on Friday who was not happy to hear my complaining. But the point is we really do need to address the fact that we're not equipped to handle the traffic that needs to get from Hunterdon County to either Essex, Bergen, or New York City.
That's right. And we're not equipped to handle the traffic, and we're also not prepared to handle really the change in population that is very likely to happen over the next decade in this region of the country.
Yes, right, because of the affordable housing obligations that towns are settling. And it's not all, obviously not all of the units are affordable, but the market rates that go with it are, there's a move to go to rentals and smaller footprints for people, for the younger generation.
Right, and the reality is that if we're talking about infrastructure, we also need to be talking about public transportation. And so not just how do we allow for more cars, but how do we allow for more public transportation? So, you know, I'll put it out there. I lived in New York City for 13 years, so I love public transportation. I love a subway. I love a bus. I love a taxi. I love some way in which for me to avoid driving. And, of course, it's ironic because now I live in Hunterdon County, and there is no way to avoid driving, right?
It's all
traffic. Look at me like I'm crazy because I will walk, you know, miles to get places because I like to walk and I'm used to walking. But I think as a community, as a region, we need to start thinking about, you know, we have two things going on. We have an aging population.
Yes.
And so we do need to continue to address. I know we have some resources, right, for public transportation for our senior citizens who may need extra assistance in that department. But then we also have to address the fact that younger generations actually like public transportation.
Right.
And that they appreciate the ability to work while while taking public transport to work.
Right.
I know my husband, you know, he does take the Transbridge bus to work in the morning, and he works on the bus
yes.
on the way to work, and he works on the bus on the way home,
right?
Which, you know, is somewhat atrocious culturally, but we won't.
Yeah, that's another that's whole conversation.
That's another topic. But that's the reality of the situation right now,
right.
And so I think a lot of folks are in that situation. So if you're driving, obviously, you know, you're not able to do that, and having that sort of space and room to be able to get some, you know, get some more, whether it's work or reading or, you know, whatever
sleep.
It is that you do. Yeah, sleeping, whatever it is that you could be doing in that hour to hour and a half time of transport. I think, you know, thinking about public transportation, thinking about one seat rides into the city.
Yes.
Thinking about more train access, more bus access. We only have the one bus line, and as great as it is, it's not sufficient for the volume of people we are going to be moving over the next, you know,
decade.
10 to 15 years
yeah.
from here into the more populated centers.
Right.
So these are things that I don't see the planning yet, and I would love to see what the plans are. But I do think they must be thought about carefully and planned for and
right.
addressed going forward.
That's it. I mean, we've talked about the fact that, you know, and I get that our population density right now doesn't seem to account for the need. I think part of that is it's a false number because people are driving because of the convenience of being able to drive and not having to get on a train that stops at every stop. It's like being behind the school bus that stops at every driveway.
That's exactly it. Yep.
It's enough to send anyone over the edge. And for someone like me who did not grow up with public transportation, who doesn't really do public transportation, you know, I like having my car. It's
right.
a control thing. I get it. But, you know, if there was a way for us to be able to, you know, have that one seat in, you know, and we're going to do it as part of our group. I know the Raritan Valley Alliance, which is a group of towns along the Raritan Valley line, have been advocating. And we did have a one seat ride off hours for a short period of time. But again, no one was using it. Well, no one was using it because no one's traveling to work at that time.
Right.
You know, I get it because there's a limited space of what can get into the city. So that's the issue that has to be addressed, is we need to be able to not only update the crumbling infrastructure, because I don't know if you've driven through the Lincoln Tunnel recently, but
yeah.
every time I drive through, I see another few more tiles that have come off.
Yeah.
And, you know, however long ago that was built, and, you know, we keep putting Band-Aids on our infrastructure problems. I know when they were doing, I think it was the Pulaski Skyway, I used to drive Mini Cooper. And I was driving over the bridge to go speak at an event, and there was a pothole the size of my car.
Yeah. Yes.
The fact that there are those kinds of issues that
right.
our residents, the most densely populated state in the country, are dealing with says something about where our priorities are. You know, we really need to be working on improving the quality of the infrastructure. And you know as well as I do that if you put the money into it before it breaks, it's a better quality and it's usually cheaper rather than dealing with the repair at midnight in the middle of a snowstorm on Christmas.
Well, absolutely. And I think, you know, some of this, and while we spend our time talking about, you know, town level issues, municipal level issues, some
right.
of these are truly federal level issues, right? Because
right.
we're talking about federal highways in,
yes.
in some instances where, you know, if we're talking about things like traffic congestion on Interstate 78, we're talking about congestion coming from Pennsylvania. So we're talking about transportation issues coming across
state lines.
Across state lines.
Right.
Due to an increase in warehousing. Warehousing levels in Pennsylvania that has changed the makeup of what's happening along 78. So traffic that might have been on Interstate 80 before is now transporting across 78 more.
Right.
And so we're seeing more accidents, more traffic, more congestion on 78, which is part of the process, right? And so some of the some of the issue is federal level. And mm-hmm. as, you know, very invested and involved municipal level officials, we are aware of that. I don't know that everyone is paying attention to that. I know that you and I are, for sure, and our council is. And we've talked to all of our first responders about these things because they're dealing with it.
Right. They're responding and paying. Our residents are paying for the accidents that are on 78 that don't necessarily involve Clinton residents. And not to say that they shouldn't have services. That, you know, that's absolutely not what we're saying. But the point is who's bearing the cost?
Right.
And it's the local residents that wind up bearing the cost of those responses.
Right. And so I think, you know, at a certain point, we have to start escalating these conversations to both the federal level and the state level. And there need to be committees, commissions put in place to start investigating, you know, how are we going to deal with these issues? Because it can't be the sole responsibility of a small town of 2,700 people
right.
to bear the burden of increased traffic coming from Pennsylvania, right? I'm not willing to say to our residents, yeah, you're just going to have to deal with that.
Right.
That obviously we're not, that's not what we're saying. And so, you know, as with anything, it's a long slog process.
It is.
to get people to say, okay, well, this is obviously an issue we need to deal with. How do we deal with it? And so, you know, I think a lot of towns are dealing with that very same issue because as people move out from urban centers and start populating farther and farther away, these issues are going to continue to arise.
Right.
And so this is new to Hunterdon County. And I think, you know, it's something that I've talked to a lot of folks about because people say, well, I don't want more people here. I understand that, but it's not really an I want or I don't want. It just is.
Right.
So we have to get past the I don't want this because you don't have a choice, right? It is what it is. It's happening. So let's start to address the consequences of it happening, right?
Right.
And the reality is people are coming. How are we going to address it? And infrastructure is one of the major, major issues we need to start dealing with. So that's water, that's sewer, that's our roads, and that's intelligent planning.
Right.
And that's understanding what it means to intelligently plan. And so that means having professionals who know what they're doing and people who are willing to spend the time to plan in advance and to think forward about who's coming, where are they going, and what do they need.
Right. Exactly. You know, and that is, you know, it watching how all of these pieces tie together. You know, I remember the first time I ever ran for council a few years ago. 2003 it was. And there was conversations with residents about more housing. And this was when Twin Ponds was kind of in the process because that had been part of a litigation that the town was in back in the 90s.
Right.
So it took to the early 2000s for that to even kind of come forward. And everyone was so focused on the number of school children. Because obviously that's still, you know, it's an impact because it's, you know, you have a finite amount of space within a school to put students. And the last thing you want to do is have a program or where you have teachers working out of closets or students in rooms that really shouldn't be classrooms, whatever it may be.
Of course.
But the other piece of it is also talking about, well, what does that mean for the water? What does that mean for the sewer? What does that mean? How much more traffic is that going to bring onto our roads?
Right.
And it's interesting to kind of watch how all of those things are interconnected and making sure that we're thinking. So when you're talking about, you know, the development that is going over by the Agway property or by the A&P, yes, it is absolutely going to bring more cars. We get it. We know it. What we need to do is figure out how we best move the traffic.
Right. Well, and let's talk about that for a second, because most studies are showing, so development is going to happen there one way or the other, right? It's zoned for development.
Right.
It wasn't Agway.
It's part of a settlement.
But even if it wasn't housing,
something was
going to go there.
Yes.
Because these aren't vacant. The Agway and the A&P are not in Clinton. We're just talking Clinton now.
Right.
The Agway and the A&P were not vacant land.
Right.
This is not the same as MOBIS. These were not vacant properties. So there would have been traffic there regardless, right? And the A&P, if it had become another grocery store, would have been massive amounts of traffic. So if you're talking about a residential development there versus another grocery store, residential development will actually have less traffic
right.
than a grocery store would. So if the concern there is traffic, I don't mean to be too assertive about this, but I feel very confident in saying that the traffic will be less with a residential mixed-use development than it would be with just a full-blown grocery store.
Right.
And if we're talking about the Agway development, the same holds true. If that was a commercial development and it was some sort of commercial retail or similar-based property, you're going to get much more traffic because you have customers coming in and out all day long versus right. people who come in the morning or leave in the morning, rather, and come home at night. It's a totally different traffic pattern. So, you know, we can debate that, but there are studies that have been done in every other town because people have this same conversation, and it's right. a natural concern. But smarter people than me who study traffic patterns have studied this and have answered these questions. additionally, long-term studies done out of Rutgers have shown that these sorts of developments, these sorts of apartment developments, typically do not produce a large quantity of school-aged children.
Right.
So in terms of overburdening school systems, it's unlikely that we're going to get a massive increase in school-aged children. Will we get some? Of course we will. Will we get hundreds?
No.
Very unlikely.
Right. I think Twin Ponds, so that's 66 apartments that produced less than 10 kids.
Right.
If I'm not mistaken.
Right.
And it's going to be the same thing. I mean, the apartments are not, and listen, this is not to say that they're not for families, but what you're finding are people who are downsizing, who want to stay in the area, still want to be in a community, or recent college graduates, teachers, you know, emergency service personnel. Those are the individuals who are coming in, who are just kind of getting started.
People trying out a neighborhood.
Yes.
People who are then going to become homeowners in the neighborhood.
Right.
I know many people who live in Clinton now who did that, who rented
mm-hmm.
in the town and then bought a house in the town.
Right. Especially if you're not from the area, to understand what it is. You know, listen, I grew up in Clinton, so I knew what I was getting when I was coming back, and that was my goal, was to come back for it. And there are a lot of people that have done that as well.
But, of course.
But to your point, it's true. You know, getting caught into a mortgage and then saying, oh, this isn't really the right place. I've known people that's happened to. And it's not an easy transition because now you've got another whole process. It's not just moving. It's selling the house before you can get into another place.
Right. But it's also a different market. It's harder to get a mortgage.
Right.
It's also harder to buy a property in Clinton than it is to buy in other parts of Hunterdon County. So, you know, there's a whole host of reasons one might want an apartment in Clinton.
Right.
That are good reasons. And so a lot of the fear of apartment living folks is really just fear, and it's unfounded, and it's not based in actual facts.
Right.
And I get that. It's change. It's difficult. People aren't used to it. And all of that is normal. And I understand it. But we do have to move through it,
right?
As a community,
it is a change. Listen, it's a change for Clinton from a majority owner occupied to, you know, a larger number of rentals. But we already have apartments in town,
right?
And we know that many of them who live in the apartments have lived there for years. You know, that has been that's just where they decided to live. They didn't,
right.
They chose not to buy a home. So, you know, it. To your point, it really is about people who are going to be part of our community as well.
Right. And a way to expand our community and
right.
make our community...
New volunteers.
We will take new volunteers.
Always. And all volunteers. Anyone who wants to volunteer.
Exactly. And it's a way to make our community even more vibrant, even more exciting, and more friendly and fulsome. So I
yes.
think there are ways to embrace this and to look at this as a positive forward momentum for our town.
Yes, it is. And we're going to go to our commercial break, so stay tuned, and we'll be back to continue the conversation.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
All right, we are back. So, you know, we got off on a little tangent talking about housing because of obviously the cars that you know, potentially come in with any new housing development. And yes, there are new cars. Absolutely. There's no dispute there.
Right.
But something else that we've done in Clinton, and I'm sure other communities that have utilities have done this as well, but 8 years ago when I first became mayor, you know, one of the things that we were dealing with was water infrastructure. You know, we have acquired water lines in multiple towns. Some of them date back 100-plus years.
Right.
And the first year I was mayor in 12, we were digging up Main Street. The lines were almost 100 years old, and I was almost afraid to see what we were going to find, you know, what kind of artifacts we might find under the ground. Good news is we didn't find too many artifacts. What we did find is aging infrastructure. So something that we've talked about is making sure there's a way, because as most people know, water main breaks happen in the heat of the summer, the cold of the winter, a holiday, a weekend, something. And it becomes more expensive because now we're paying overtime for people to come out and do emergency work. By creating the asset management plan, which has taken us just about 8 years to really do and put it in place. And it's a rolling asset management plan.
Right.
So it's you know, we're always looking 5 years out, but there's a way to ensure that we're updating infrastructure, you know, kind of like when they do the reassessments in communities. You take a quarter of your town each year so that you're constantly reassessing properties. Same thing with the asset management. We're doing that with the water line. So we're making sure, you know, we identified the really bad areas. So we recently did a stretch of road in Clinton Township that has heavy truck traffic and has had multiple breaks. Obviously, working with the township, we were able to do the water main replacement, and then the township did road replacement. You know, so that's a partnership there. It's not just, you know, us tearing up the road, putting in the pipe, and then filling it with coal patch. It was the township worked to get funding to actually redo the roads. So making sure we do it that way as well.
Well, and just to back up for one second, just to make sure everyone understands, the water company is services more than just the town of Clinton. So we understand that, of course, and I think most people do, but if you're new to the area, you may not realize that the town of Clinton has a water utility and a sewer utility.
Right.
Utility, sorry. It's hard to get that out. and that those two utilities service larger areas than just the town.
Right.
And so we have agreements with various communities to service their needs. And so that's what you're referring
right.
to.
Right. So, and it is the water utility is a separate entity from right. the town of Clinton. So while we oversee it as mayor and council, it is a separate entity. Residents, water users, water customers are billed directly by the water utility. The money goes into the water utility, and that's used to maintain the water utility. There's not a crossover.
Right.
What we do have is shared service with our employees. Our town employees are trained in both water, sewer, and general public works.
Right. And so what we do is what we were talking about earlier, which is we plan.
Right.
And we plan ahead. And so we don't just plan for next week. We plan for years in advance to make sure that there is enough water, that we have capacity in the sewer system to service all of the surrounding areas that we have commitments out for.
And that the infrastructure is appropriate and maintained.
Exactly. And that we're staying on top of all of the requirements that the state puts out.
Unfunded mandates.
I let you put it out there.
That's okay. I'll put it out there anytime.
You know, and there are many, right? There are many departments, and there are many different, some great, some not as great requirements that we have to follow. There's different requirements from the EPA. There's different, you know, water quality requirements, all sorts of things that we need to make sure that we're paying attention to and
right.
meeting. Whether we can pay for them or not, and whether the state is paying for them or not. And so that requires planning.
Yes.
And we are, you know, always thinking, and, you know, we have a water committee meeting this week, and we will be sitting in this meeting thinking about how are we planning for the future so that we have enough water for all of the projects coming online, for mm-hmm. all the projects that are already online. What do we need to think about in the next, you know, 3 months, 6 months, 5 years,
right.
and how are we strategizing to make sure that everything is done according to the proper codes, regulations, and requirements?
Right. And when we had Peg here, we were talking about the fact of, you know, the municipally owned versus the authorities.
Right.
You know, and from our perspective, we look at it that we're much more cost effective as a municipally owned utility because for us, it's not about, you know, profit at the bottom line. This is a
right.
money comes in, money goes out. It doesn't pay for, you know, anything other than the water utility or the sewer utility. So I think there's a benefit to that because we're able to keep our costs down.
Yeah.
Some things become more expensive because we have to do, you know, we have to go out to bid. We can't
right.
go always with a contractor that we want because we've had other work. It, you know, it's the lowest bid. And then making sure that we work within the parameters that are established of the project. You know, those things can get cumbersome. But ultimately, when you do an analysis and you look at water purveyors across the state, and even across just our region, we are one of the lowest as from a cost perspective.
Well, right. We don't have any shareholders to go back to
right.
and convince that we've made the right decisions
right.
and that they're getting their, you know, getting their payout every month, their dividend, whatever
right.
they expect to be getting. And so for that reason alone, I think it is the right way to go for our customers at this time. But you know, for anyone who is listening and who is concerned about whether or not, you know, with all these projects coming online,
mm-hmm.
whether or not we are thinking ahead or whether or not we
right.
are planning, you know, please rest assured we are aware that we need to have enough water and sewer capacity for everything that comes online. And that should we come to a point where we don't, you know, we understand that we need to go to the state and
right.
ensure that is addressed.
Right. Absolutely. And that's the conversation we currently have because it's DEP, but it's also the Highlands.
Right.
Because we're part of the Highlands.
Right.
You know, our wells are in what some refer to as water deficit areas.
Mm-hmm.
So our recharge we need to ensure that our recharge is exceeding and that we're going to continue to be able to, you know, withdraw the water from the ground because all of the water that we provide to our customers is groundwater.
Right.
We don't use any of the surface water.
Right.
So, you know, that's the other piece of it. It was like, well, you got the reservoir, got the two reservoirs. Yeah. That's not our water.
That's not us.
We're not drawing from the reservoir to provide. And so, you know, I'm going to be my technical geek here because this is really interesting to me. You can't mix groundwater and surface water. The requirements of how it's treated as it comes through the pipes are different.
Right.
And when you try to merge them together, apparently it doesn't merge well. Who knew? But, you know, these are all of the things that we have to take into account as we're working on, you know, the initiatives and preparing for the future. You know, to Riley's point, we are going to have additional housing. It's coming. It's not anything that we have any control over.
Right.
And we're all trying to do the best we can with ensuring that it's appropriate and it is smart planning.
Right.
We're lucky to have professionals that are that care about the town, you know, and I'm sure other professionals in other towns care about theirs as well, but they truly care and they understand and they listen. So yeah. While balancing the requirements that are coming out of the courts and out of the state along with what we currently have, it's a fine balance. You're walking a tightrope.
Yeah.
Because tipping either way can have a negative impact on someone, on some side.
That's right.
So, it's that balancing act that we constantly take on. And the same thing with the sewer. So the sewer utility works a little differently in that we bill large users. So we have our residents who are users of the sewer and then other towns that have their own sewer utilities that we bill for their sewer. So, you know, Highbridge, Clinton Township, Union, and Franklin. Yes, make sure I get that right. it's the same thing. You know, we're working on creating the asset management plan and ensuring that the all of the work and all of the planning for the build outs that we can accommodate. You know, because now let's throw a little wrench in there, and the DEP is looking to do the new C1 rules,
right?
Which, while will not impact our existing plant, would impact our ability to expand the plant,
right?
So what happens? You know, again, we need to think about what happens when we get through this next decade, and someone decides somewhere along the way that we need more housing still. How are we going to address that?
Right.
You know, and who's going to be making that decision? Because, you know, who's ever sitting in the mayor and council seats 10 years from now, because I'm going to be drinking out of a coconut on the beach in 10 years, hopefully anyway, because college will be paid for. But their hands are going to be tied.
Right.
You know, and while we're not trying to make plans for future councils, but we're trying to prepare so that whatever issues they face, they have the tools they need to address them.
That's right. I mean, when we talk about smart planning, we're talking about creating room, right? We're talking about instead of backing people into corners, we're talking about giving options.
Right.
And so if you're planning, that means you're creating multiple plans.
Yes.
So if there is an asset plan in place, then that inherently must be flexible.
Right.
So it has to be, yes, so it's a rolling 5-year asset plan. That means you're constantly looking at it and making sure that it makes sense over time. It doesn't mean that it's a fixed, inflexible, this is what it is, I'm never going to change it plan. It
right.
means I'm always thinking about how does this make sense going forward.
Exactly.
And so that is smart planning. It is not I'm going to put a flat cap on everything and this is how it's going to be for the next decade.
Right.
Because that doesn't work.
No. Well, right? We've seen it, right? How many things change in the 2 years that you've been on council?
Right. Everything.
Everything you thought you knew has changed.
It keeps changing. And it changes for a variety of reasons. It changes
right.
because our community changes, but it also changes because the state sends changes, the federal government sends changes. Life is change. And so
right.
you have to be willing to be flexible in order to accommodate that. Sure, there are certain things that, you know, are constant, of course. I mean, Main Street is a constant. But businesses on Main Street change.
Right.
You know, hopefully not all of them. Let's really hope.
Right, absolutely.
Right? But some of them will change. And so you have to be willing and able to adapt to that constant ebb and flow of life.
Right.
And that's part of planning for the future. And that, I think, as a council, you know, certainly you and I are willing and able to do. But I think as the council as a whole, that is something we are doing well. And I hope that in the county, that's what councils are looking to do.
Right.
Because going forward, you know, given the changing nature of time right now and
right.
the way in which people are moving and mm-hmm. you know, people aren't I know having lived here now as long as I've lived here, I know people have lived here for hundreds of years. Families have lived here for a very long time. That sort of lifestyle is changing.
Right.
And I think it's starting to hit this area now. And people are, I think, surprised by that probably.
I'm sure.
And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it's going to increase, you know, rapidly.
Yes.
That there will be an influx of people who've never lived here before.
Right.
Right. And so that will change the dynamic. And I think we need to prepare for that and sort of be willing and able to address that.
Right. Well, that's it. And it's a merging of the two. So
exactly.
It's having that, the feeling of what Clinton has always been, that community.
Exactly.
And community is the people, not necessarily the place.
Yep.
It's ensuring that there's this meshing of both the old community and the new community.
That's right.
And making people feel welcome. I mean,
right.
that's the one thing about Clinton is, I remember someone was visiting, where were they? I forget where she was from, and she was walking down Main Street, and someone said hello to her, and she was afraid.
Yeah.
And it was like, we were meeting for lunch, and she's like, someone said hello to me on Main Street. I'm like, because that's the community we are.
Right.
I mean, you think of the East Coast, you think of New Jersey, New York, and it's this rat race, rushing. And it is to an extent. I mean, it's definitely much different than the Midwest. But that sense of community and welcoming of people is what's really exciting. So, in fact, we're going to have, which I didn't get a chance to tell you yet, but Thursday, Sunrise Rotary has a group of visitors from Russia.
Oh, wonderful.
Small business owners from Russia who are part of the Rotarians. They're coming. They're going to be in Clinton. So we're going to spend some time with them in the morning and then do a tour of the town to talk to them about, you know, planning and economic development. And it'd be interesting to kind of get their take on it because obviously, you know, I don't know really know much about Russia. But, you know, what kind of community they're coming from and what they experience. I mean, that's the other piece of what we do, too, is having the opportunity to network and hear what other communities in other in other states and other, you know, other towns within New Jersey
right.
are all doing and how we can take some of best practices. Because right, we don't want to recreate the wheel.
Never.
But if we can learn from others as we're moving forward, I think that is a great opportunity. And sharing. Again, I'll talk about Clinton 24 hours a day.
Right.
I drive people crazy. Every time I go visit someone, I have to pull out pictures of Clinton and the ducks visiting, you know, made to order.
Yes.
And
yes.
But that's who we are.
Right.
And that's what makes us so special.
That's right. And I think opening our arms to new people is something that will just enhance that.
Yes.
And that's, you know, that's something I'm excited about.
Yes,
I think
me too.
We can do that.
Yeah, I mean, like it's, well, obviously, you know, we're going to have a lot of new visitors in the next couple of weeks because Haunted starts.
That's right.
At the Red Mill.
That's right.
And then there's a Pumpkin Fest. So, you know, the second, third, and fourth weekend of October will be insane in town.
Yes.
But it's a fun insanity.
Well, it's a charming, small town feel, but it's, you know, lively and new
right.
at the same time. So I think that all of that is a wonderful thing.
It is. All right, we're going to go to our commercials, and then we'll be back to finish out the rest of the session, which today actually went really fast. So stay tuned. We got some work to talk about.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental. NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Okay, we are back for our last 10 minutes or so, and then we'll be leaving. And the next show will be coming on. We'll be back next week. But anyway, to the whole point of infrastructure, you know, and let's talk a little bit about what we see in our travels. So, you driving down to Atlantic City last week.
Oh goodness,
that's a long ride.
Yes,
but anyone that drives the Parkway will see constant road work.
287 is like
287
seven full drive.
It is. Well, and so that's an interesting thing, right? So we've been watching 78. I get complaints from people all the time because at night they're closing 78 to do milling and paving.
Yep.
We don't see that happening on 287.
No.
287, my car could probably fall into a pothole in some places.
So I've done the drive to Atlantic City twice in the last two, 3 weeks,
right,
whatever. And I will say that the hardest part of the drive is 287 because it is so bumpy and scraped up and potholed, and also just it's also more heavily traveled. I mean, right, the Parkway is obviously jam-packed, but
you don't have the big tractor trailers on the
that's right, on
the Parkway that you do.
Exactly.
And that's the other piece of it, right? Because you've got that whole swath where they're coming interstate, the tractors to your tractor trailers to your point. But yet 78, and I don't know the answer to this, there's been much more emphasis on 78 traffic and making sure that the road is repaired.
Right.
I mean, I don't want to tell you how many times I've gotten stuck in it. You know, it's like down to one lane at 9 o'clock at night coming home from wherever we're at, whatever we're doing.
Right.
It's like, okay, the roads. And while I'm aggravated at the time, I'm appreciative because now it's a much easier road to travel. You know, I'm not taking my car into the shop for another wheel alignment because it's
right,
been on the disaster road.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the answer is. This is obviously not my area of expertise because I'm not a transportation expert, despite the fact that I play one on the radio.
Right. It's okay.
But
we have a little bit of expertise in everything.
Exactly. But I do think, you know, there are certain roads that just seem to be left by the wayside. And I think part of it is how heavily traveled they are. I mean, I think 287 is probably one of the major arteries in New Jersey. And I think that particular stretch of 287 between the Parkway and 78
right,
is just bumper to bumper, like 90% of the time, right?
Right? It is.
So I don't know how they even shut that down to do work. I mean, you remember when we were coming back from Atlantic City
in the snowstorm.
I mean, they just didn't even, they couldn't even plow it because it was jam-packed.
Right, there
cars.
Was no, they couldn't accommodate. No, that's true. I mean, and that whole swath of Middlesex County has just boomed in the last 20 years.
Right. There's so many people. And, you know, so I don't know what the solution is there, but I also don't know where the funding is, right? Like, how do you pay for these things constantly?
Who pays for them?
Right. And that area, it's like you pave it and then it's again,
right.
You're immediately redoing it.
Right.
You know, and,
well, and
so,
part of that is because of the weather that we experience and
course.
The fact that we treat our roads with the salting
right.
materials and it eats away. So there's this constant, how do you balance it and what's the answer? Not, and someone has to come up with an asphalt that is resistant to the weather.
Right. What I mean, and what I would love to see is somebody figure out how to recycle plastic into paving material, which I'm sure there is a way. I mean, and
you
I
recycle probably, plastic into everything else.
I probably just gave away my billion-dollar secret.
You probably did.
But, I mean, at this point, I don't see what else you do with all the plastic. So somebody figure that out and start. I mean, it probably would melt in the summer, but
it's melting now, though, if you think about
it.
Using
the
tar and everything else that you're putting in.
I'm just, you know, I do think that is part of the problem, right, is that you fix it and then it's immediately breaking down again, particularly on those roads where we're talking about these incredibly heavy trucks.
Right.
And that stretch is going, you know, straight to the ports or out to Staten Island. And I don't know what you do there.
Right.
But it is dangerous. I mean, there were crazy potholes. There were, you know, there were half-paved stretches.
And part of that road is still concrete.
Right. And, you know, when was that road built? I don't know exactly, but it was
long
probably,
before our time.
You know, it's probably one of the older roads out there.
Right.
So the, whatever was there originally, you know, that has now been built on top of is,
right.
I can't even imagine what that base looks like. So
that's true.
You know, you're trying to put, as you said, like, I think when we started, I have the feeling there's a lot of band-aiding going on.
Right.
And I don't know. I don't know how you resolve that. I will say the parkway was actually delightful on the
it
way
was.
To Atlantic City this last time. So so kudos
was.
To whoever's doing the parkway these days.
Well, and you think about it. So the parkway, too, now they're all – you don't even have to go through the toll lanes. They're
yes.
all easy pass.
Oh, the easy pass was a wonderful invention because
it
that
truly
– I remember as a kid doing the tokens and missing the token bucket.
Yep.
And just being like, well –
the game was if you could do it, throw it over the car from the passenger side.
I never got that good.
We definitely didn't get
I
that
remember
good.
Trying to get the token in and just being like, well, that's game over for me.
Yeah, camera, see, I'm trying. It just missed.
But, you know, I think we need funding. I think we need top-down funding for federal funding
right.
for infrastructure throughout the country. I mean, if you talk to anybody, my husband's in infrastructure, so talking
right.
to him about these things, you know, we have bridges, tunnels, subway systems, electrical grids.
That are very old.
Ports, water systems in major, major infrastructure systems in this country that are in horrifying shape. So our little part of it is in incredible shape.
Right.
Comparatively. So if that's an area of concern to you, I would certainly reach out to your congresspeople and your senators and suggest that they start looking at that and working on it. Because I do think it's a major issue. Not a sexy issue, not an exciting issue.
No,
but
not.
It is a massive undertaking that needs to start taking place. And it's a place to create jobs. So.
Yes, absolutely.
And good, high-paying, important jobs that
right.
people should have and valuable jobs.
Sustainable.
Yep.
Economic sustainability.
Absolutely. And valuable jobs. Jobs one could be proud of. These
right.
are good jobs.
And there's more than enough work.
Exactly. So
yeah, that is truly the one thing. And we saw that after, what was it, 2008, when there was a lot of money allocated from the federal government for infrastructure.
Right.
You know, for the right kinds of projects, for the improvements. So it was giving, putting people back to work, but it was also creating a benefit for society as a whole.
Yeah.
Because we were fixing the roads and the bridges and the tunnels that desperately needed it. You know,
right.
we fix our little piece of it.
Right.
And we know other mayors and councils do the same thing. They work to focus on their little piece. But the bigger picture is it needs to be addressed, and we can't ignore it.
Absolutely. And when we're talking about large states, you know, like in the Midwest and places like Texas, and, you know, you have to start thinking about public-private partnerships and
yes.
bigger outfits that have the capacity to do these kinds of infrastructure projects and take these things on. Because if we ignore them forever... then we're going to be in very serious trouble.
Right. What you see happen in the movies will actually happen in real life.
Well, right. I mean, and as I said, it's not sexy. It's not fun. It's not particularly interesting to most people other than, you know, infrastructure nerds like myself.
Right.
but it is the reality that these things have to be addressed and have to be dealt with, or you will wind up with, you know, collapsing bridges and roads that have sinkholes and real issues.
Right. So. Nope, agreed. Okay, with that, we are going to go to our final commercial and sign off. So we will see you again next week, and we'll have another exciting topic to talk about. If you have ideas or questions you want to ask, again, you know, reach out to either one of us. If there's people that you think we should be talking to that would be a good guest, again, let us know as well. You know, we're figuring this format out as we go, and we will probably have more guests as we move forward. But really, this is our opportunity, and this is your opportunity to tell us what you want to hear about. And we will talk again soon.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise financial advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heidi and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
A lawyer for the whistleblower whose complaint set off a House impeachment inquiry says President Trump's comments could put his client in danger. The whistleblower's legal team expressing concerns in a letter to the acting director of national intelligence, Joseph McGuire, citing the president's call last week for the person who gave the whistleblower information to be publicly identified. Meanwhile, Republican Representative Doug Collins, who sits on the House Intelligence Committee, says the complaint from that whistleblower is being mischaracterized.
When if you look at the actual whistleblower complaint, this is not about involving abuse of an intelligence community issue. This is not about what whistleblowers normally use for. This is really a disagreement over policy, a disagreement over what they thought the tone was in a phone call. And when you look at the transcript, it was not there.
He spoke on Fox, and this is USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wade Allyn-Root for Amp Fest 19. Amp Fest 19 is the most entertaining political event and Trump Fest of the year for any conservative who wants to be empowered and entertained, or for any Trump superfan who wants to just have a blast. If that's you, head to the Trump Doral Hotel on October 10th to 12th in sizzling, sexy Miami, Florida. Headliner speakers at Amp Fest 19 include Sarah Huckabee Sanders, Dinesh D'Souza, Charlie Kirk of the Turning Point USA, Brandon Straka of the Walkaway Movement, and of course, yours truly, Wade Allyn-Root. I love that guy. But this is more than a traditional political event or Trump Love Fest. Amp Fest 19 features a Texas Hold'em poker tournament, golf tournament, comedy night, pool party, yacht party, fashion show, movie screening, Women for Trump social, and prayer breakfast hosted by Alveda King. To register for Amp Fest 19, just go to AmericanPriority.com. That's AmericanPriority.com. It all happens October 10th to 12th at the Trump Doral in sizzling, sexy Miami. I'll see you there. AmericanPriority.com.
Iran's foreign minister warning the United States it won't be able to finish any war it starts with Iran. During an interview with NBC's Meet the Press, Javad Zarif said U.S. intelligence agencies have launched a cyber war against Iran already. He warned the Trump administration against seeking a military solution to conflicts with Iranian-backed forces in the Middle East. Meanwhile, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia speaks to CBS News.
Nora O'Donnell asked Mohammed bin Salman about the gruesome murder of a Saudi journalist. The Saudi Crown Prince claims he's innocent and also responsible.
Did you order the murder of Jamal Khashoggi?
Absolutely not. This was a heinous crime, but I take full responsibility as a leader in Saudi Arabia.
That report from correspondent Wendy King. U.S. Senator Cory Booker staying in the Democratic presidential race. He had earlier threatened to withdraw if he didn't hit a major fundraising goal by the end of last week. This is USA Radio News.
America's built and based on liberties and freedoms. Liberty HealthShare brings that to healthcare. The liberty of choosing your own doctor. The liberty of choosing your own hospital. Liberty HealthShare makes healthcare affordable to millions of Americans. Ignite your liberty. Sharing plans starting at $199 for a single, $399 for a couple, and no matter how big the family, only $529. That's $529 for the entire family. To learn how you can save, go to lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com.
SpaceX founder Elon Musk unveiling a new prototype of a spacecraft for private trips to the moon. He does so on the 11th anniversary of his company's first successful orbital launch of a rocket. More on the story from USA Radio's Wendy King.
The new Starship, called Mark 1, and a super heavy booster will send up to 100 people into space, then the moon, and ultimately to Mars. Also on display was Raptor, a full-flow, staged combustion rocket engine, which is powered by cryogenic methane and liquid oxygen. Musk hopes to reach Earth orbit with a Starship prototype in about 6 months, and people could start flying aboard the vehicle, possibly by next year. Last year, SpaceX said they're sending Japanese billionaire Yusaku Maezawa and other artists around the moon sometime next year. Musk said his long-term vision is to send humans to the moon and to Mars to make humanity multiplanetary. For USA Radio News, I'm Wendy King.
And singer Kanye West says he's done with secular rap and is going gospel. That's what he told a Chicago listening party on Saturday for his new album, Jesus is King, a Kanye West experience. Find us online anytime at usaradio.com. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
A lawyer for the whistleblower whose complaint set off a House impeachment inquiry says President Trump's comments could put his client in danger. The whistleblower's legal team expressing concerns in a letter to the acting director of national intelligence, Joseph McGuire, citing the president's call last week for the person who gave the whistleblower information to be publicly identified. Meanwhile, Republican Representative Doug Collins, who sits on the House Intelligence Committee, says the complaint from that whistleblower is being mischaracterized.